Pickaxe.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Jetzt nur du, dein Podcast und eine leckere Auszeit. Ab zu Aldi Nord. Für 2,99 Euro bringst du deine Mittagspause mit Sushi ins Rollen. Lecker. Und für 1,99 Euro gönnst du dir danach noch eine kleine Eiszeit. Bei Aldi Nord findest du immer das Passende. Klingt gut? Dann probier die Snacktime Sushi Box ab 205 Gramm für nur 2,99 Euro. Oder Mucki Sandwich Eis, je 8 Stück für nur 1,99 Euro. Das ist Gutes für alle zum Aldi-Preis. Jetzt in deiner Filiale. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Ladies, Gentlemen, Boys, Girls, People of all ages, welcome back to the best fucking podcast in the whole fucking world. That's right.
Welcome to the Triforce Podcast!
Lewis is sick.
That was the sound of applause.
Lewis has
I'm
the sniffles.
I'm not so bad. I don't know. It's weird. I'm feeling a bit traumatized. It's like spider season, right? Apparently.
Right.
And I was told
sure
this
is,
by Martin.
Sure is. Yeah, no, it is. Not,
the people give you conflicting information on spiders, right? So some people say, oh, you can't put the spider outside because it'll die. And other people say, oh, you can't leave the spiders inside because my auntie left one inside and she found it in one of her pot plants and it had, and she poked the egg sac and a million tiny baby spiders ran out and scattered everywhere all over her entire house, and now her house is infested with spiders and she can't live there. That's like the two extremes. So you can either kill spiders. I feel like spiders are the kind of the knights of your household, right? They defend
awesome.
Your house from other worse bugs. I mean,
I like
spiders compared to little beetles and cockroaches and other shit. Do you know what I mean? Spiders are fucking top notch. They're like top of the... I want them around. So if I have to leave a few of them around...
They're awesome in that sense, but I draw the line when there's more than one. You know, like I can handle just like one fucking renegade spider out there doing work, you know, catching all the bugs and eating them and keeping the equilibrium of the house in check or whatever. But like if they make more spiders and all of a sudden there's like 200 spiders, I'm out. Like I don't like that at all.
I'm gonna be
like,
honest with you, I wouldn't mind if every room in my house had a spider web in. It wouldn't bother me. But I tend to not like the ones that
I think
are useless.
At that point, you start living in the fucking Halloween house. Do you know what I mean?
No, it's just they're cool. They're cool animals. I mean, if you look at the spider, right? Look how tiny its little tiny head is. Think about all the amazing stuff it does that's squeezed into that tiny, tiny, tiny little head. And yet they know all
that
the
said,
stuff they need to do. It's amazing. And they're so useful.
It's a couple of times. So last night, I was sat there on my laptop and I saw this like movement out the corner of my eye, like you do. It's kind of that animal instinct thing of a blurry, just a movement where you know it's unusual. I looked over and I saw a spider, a huge spider, legging it under the covers, eight legging it. So I went under there and I was like, oh my God, there's this huge web under there and there's like loads of bugs in there. It's like obviously packed full of food for like ages. And so I was like, oh God, I better get rid of this. So it was because it was a big spooky spider and I thought, fuck, I don't want other big spooky ones in the place. So I squashed it and flushed it down the loo.
Oh, you didn't?
I did. I'm a monster. But at the same time,
you know what
though,
you do with a big spider? The best trick is you get a glass, a see-through glass and a piece of paper. And then what you do is you sort of like put the glass over top of them and then slide the paper underneath the glass and the spider, and then you've got them contained, and then you can chuck them outside.
They die if you put them outside. So
no,
I might as well
fucking
just...
They come
don't.
From outside.
That's
they know
bullshit.
How to survive. One of the things in their tiny little heads that they know how to do is they know how to survive. Like that,
that's
they
it.
Just know what to do.
What
if I were
to
just be like a big god and pluck you out of your house and chuck you into the middle of a forest, how would you get on?
I'm not a spider!
If I was more adaptable than I am currently as like a 37-year-old modern-day dad, probably fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like, this spider has not had a 6 years of education and a university
degree. If God like took the roof off of my dad's garage while I was in the middle of playing a game of Dota in my underpants.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably die. Like, I'd be upset and I would die. But like, you know, if God plucked me out of my cave as a caveman and put me in the wilderness, I'd be fine, probably. I'd just make my way back to my cave and, like, you know, eat some berries on the way and shit in a creek or whatever, you know?
His cave is in the house. This is house spiders, I think. I don't know. If anyone knows the true reality of whether or not I should be putting them outside, let me know. But I'd seen quite a few around. And this morning...
Well, what's the alternative, though? Where, like, squashing them is kind of shitty because they are just dead.
I've seen a couple already that I haven't squashed, right? So there's already at least two more in the house.
Right.
And this morning, you know, was quite happy, and there definitely had been, like, a spider, like, crawling all over my face and shit in my mouth because he was still in the bed, and I was
They bite you, too. Do you ever get spider bites?
No. I've got this, like, thing on my neck, actually.
Does it feel kind of like a mosquito bite, but it's, like... Not quite a mosquito bite.
I poked it and a few little baby spiders came out. Is that a problem? Wait,
that's definitely a 100% sign that you have been hit by, you've been struck by a spider.
A smooth spider. Yeah. Oh, fucking hell. Sorry, I don't know where that came from, but yeah, I saw one like scatter across the bed when I woke up and it was like, one of those moments where you just jump out of the bed and you're like, well, I guess I'm not going back to bed in there ever again.
We had one the other day just like chilling on the side of the couch. And he was huge. And, like, my kids were, like, screaming. They were so fucking terrified. So I did the trick with the paper and the glass, and I showed them the spider. And they were, like, pretty cool with it. But the thing is, when you have kids, you can't just kill a spider because they get upset. Even though they're really fucking scared of them, they'll get upset if you just, like, squash a spider. Like, they're fascinated by ants and stuff like that. We had, like, a little ant infestation. And we had to get one of those little pucks, you know, with the juice in it to, like, lure them all into it. Because they were everywhere. Like, there was ants everywhere. But
in the kitchen? Or?
No, just, like, in the living room. They were just coming in through, like, this little tiny hole in the skirting board. I think they must have had, like, a colony or something. Just, like...
Just found, like, a sugary treat you drop down the back of the sofa.
I don't know, yeah. But, like, again, when you have kids, there's always, like, little crumbs and stuff everywhere. So, like... You're bound to get like a couple of like little ants and spiders and stuff. But we had a lot of ants. But we had to hide the puck because like if the kids saw the puck with all the dead spiders in it, they would have just fucking been traumatized. Like
I remember that happening a couple of times when I was a kid. Coming home and there would be like ants in a line kind of running from like a crack in the back gate or whatever, the back door, like all the way up into the like a really long line, all the way to like the kitchen and up the side of the kitchen thing and into a kitchen cabinet where there's like a jar of honey that's cracked.
Make no mistake, they're organized. They know what they're doing.
They have a serious like organizational plan.
They got a system.
You know what I read? I read a study about ants a couple of days ago. Apparently, like a decent percentage of the ants in any colony, they don't do shit. They're just like milling about. They just sort of hang out near the entrances to the
tunnels.
Kind of
like humans.
Yeah, they're just chilling out.
You got the one guy who's actually doing the work and then four guys just staring down the manhole.
You got a bunch of ants humping back like... The reason that I think ants have to carry 20 times their body weight is most of the ants are too fucking lazy to help them out. So they're like, I'll carry the giant earthworm back.
There's 19 ants not carrying their body weight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They had to make up.
I like that.
Boys, we gotta organize ourselves. We've got a bun, a huge bun, and this time Barry is not carrying it by himself. Okay, it's rude.
Fuck
everybody,
Barry.
Chip in.
I'm not helping.
It's a bun for fuck's sakes.
I
the colony
mine
will thrive.
This bit of soil. I just look. It's really important. I just stand and tap my antenna on this rock.
They're pretty cool, though, ants.
I love
but
ants.
But annoying when they infest your kitchen or your living room.
I did the same thing, but I got this kind of... It's like sugar, and you sprinkle it in a trail, and they take it back to their nest because they think it's food, and then it kills them all. I felt pretty bad, but they were all over my fucking house. Like, you put down a cup of tea, you look back at it, and there's a fucking ant in it, like, going, woohoo! You know, it's like, get out of my fucking house!
Yeah.
The kids were fascinated by the ant genocide that we wrought upon this tiny community of insects. We sort of, you know, we found where they were coming out. I sprinkled the stuff and they were like, is that food? I was like, kinda. So it was like poisoned food. And they looked at me like, you know the way you try and teach us right from wrong on a daily basis? It feels like one of those wrong things. You're killing them by tricking them into thinking it's food. I was like, look, kids, you know, you've got to draw the line somewhere. Like, it's our house. I said, how do you think the ants would feel if they were woke up in the morning, you were in there eating their eggs? They'd be like, get the fuck out of our nest. So I said, it's the same deal.
Yeah.
They were like, fair enough. It's gotta
be done. Imagine your kids like turning to like just look at like slow their head slowly turned to look really at you when you said poisoned food.
Yeah, they were like, that doesn't sound like a good daddy thing.
Oh man.
So you had to like rapidly backpedal to explain what you were doing. Yeah. Oh my god. That's
so
funny.
I got a couple of stories for you guys today that I remember.
Okay. All right.
I remember. These are things I've never spoken about with you guys before.
All right. I've got none because what I've been doing recently is just repeating old stories because I'm out of stories. So I have to generate new ones, I think.
That's a common thing to do.
You've got lots of stories, but the thing is a lot of the stories that you tell often are the ones that are like at the front of your mind. And so you tend to repeat them. But honestly, I just sat and just, I was just miles away and I started remembering a couple of things. And I thought, you know what? These are stories I have not told for a long time. And I reckon that the lads would like them. So are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So when I was briefly, it was like about a 2-year period between finishing working at British Aerospace and before I got any other kind of real job. I did all kinds of weird shit, like all kinds of weirdy bitty little jobs here and there. And one of them that I did was I was trying to be like a reviewer. So I did like some movie reviews for a website, and I went to the premiere of Lady in the Water, the M. Night Shyamalan movie. I think I've mentioned this one before. And like Guy Giamatti, what's his name? Paul Giamatti was there. And Bryce Dallas Howard was there, I almost fell over. She was so beautiful. And we were on the red carpet doing the interviews and stuff like that.
One moment. So just to pause one moment. So
yeah.
This is like watching some sort of TV show, right, where they have a weird episode where, like, the I don't know, like, Trailer Park Boys or whatever, where for some reason they get a job, I don't know, being a movie critic. And so you are just suddenly now, what, a movie critic?
It was for a website called The Spinning Image, which did cult movie reviews. I wrote a load of reviews on there.
Right.
You could write it for any, like old movies, new movies, and anything. And I watched a lot of movies. And the guy that ran it was a really nice guy, and he would send me like DVD screeners, and he would give me tickets to movies and say, you know, because they'd get them as press. He'd just say, go and write a review for it. Like, he was a very, very nice guy, very chill. And he knew that his website wasn't ever going to be like a massive website, but it was like a hobby for him that because his press credentials, he gets the passes. Because these the guys that fucking do the PR for these things have no idea whether you're a big website or a little website. They don't take the time to look. They just look at a list of people that are movie reviewers and they just fire off tickets to everybody. So I'm turning up there and there's the guy who works for the Standard, and there was a girl there who worked for Total Film and everything like that. So there's
all the reputable places.
Yeah, all the actual people.
And
then there's
me, you.
A fucking website, right?
Chump guy who's been doing it for 2 weeks.
Exactly.
had a job as a bin man.
Right.
Before that, you
now
were
hasn't worked
a zany
for like
clown,
6 months.
Children's entertainer. Before
right.
that, you
and
were
now
like,
I'm a movie
right.
reviewer, so fuck it.
Yeah.
So nice. I went out and bought a dictaphone that morning. And I went along and recorded the interviews. And I asked some questions. It was kind of funny.
What do you mean interviews? You had interviews, what, with Paul Giamatti?
Yeah. But
you
it wasn't
interview?
Like, no, not one-on-one. Let me explain. You've got an area. I think they call it the press junket. I don't know if that's what they call it, but it's like on the red carpet.
Sounds right.
Right. You've got all the fans outside, and then the red carpet comes in, and right in the lobby, there's like a, you have to stand behind like a velvet rope. Like, you're roped off from the celebs. So they stand the other side of a rope, and you're on this side, like a scrum of people all holding their dictaphones or their phones or whatever to record the audio. And my phone at the time was pretty basic. It didn't have like, this was like 15 years ago or whatever. Not quite, maybe 12 years ago. So
2006 it came
yeah,
out.
Yeah, about that. So okay. my phone.
11 years.
My phone couldn't record like audio like that. So I had to buy a dictaphone.
I mean, that was Nokia era, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
It
was a long time ago. So probably a flip up, you know, something like that. So I'm, so they come over and you shout out questions and everybody records the question and the answer. So everybody can use it basically. And this guy from London Standard was in a real huff because us, you know, non-London Evening Standard guys were trying to hone in on his racket and take his time, I guess. And he thought it was like a one-on-one interview when we were just listening to him. So when we're shouting our questions, he goes, oh, for goodness, no, like that. Like he was really upset that we were asking questions too. So that was kind of funny. But on the back of that, I was trying to get it some more review work because this one didn't pay. It was just fun. And there was this guy advertised on one of, you know, there's all these media websites and papers that you can get that advertise for work. And he wanted people to do restaurant and bar reviews. And I thought, well, I love both of those things. So I said, you're already breaking off.
I can review just about anything.
I've been a movie reviewer for a whole week now. And I'm branching out.
Exactly. I'm branching out. So I thought, fuck it, you know, if it pays, I'll do it. So yeah. I sent the guy, he said, I want you to review the following bar. This is like the job interview. Just review this bar. It was a bar in Soho, and I did a review, and he liked it. So he called me into the office. He said, all the other reviews were pretty basic. I liked yours a lot. Come on in.
Now, listen up, Ted. I've seen your movie reviews. I've seen your bar reviews. How about shoes? We're going to make you review shoes now.
I like shoes. Sure.
And then after that, we're going to send you to other countries. We're going to send you to Indonesia. And it's going to make you review Indonesia.
Country reviews. No one's done that.
You're going to be a big star, Ted. You're going to be huge.
Now, smoke this cigar with me.
tell me what you think of this cigar, Ted. Give me a review of the cigar.
Cigar review. Pitch it. Let's go. So, this guy was called Peter.
Very flavorful.
It's a lot of smoke coming out of the fiery
part. Am I supposed to inhale these things?
That's good. Mary, print that. Run it in tonight's issue. Love it. So this guy was called Peter, but Peter with like an I, like Peter, P-I-E, okay? So he was just a bit of an oddball guy, had this weird name, but he was like a classic London, like a spiv, you know, like a wide boy. He was like you know, the kind of guy that calls themselves an entrepreneur, but they've never started a business and made any fucking money. They just consider themselves an entrepreneur because they don't actually have a fucking job.
They got
right?
the blazer with the shirt underneath with no tie.
Right, they're like
and
that.
And a pair of jeans and loafers, and that makes them an entrepreneur.
Exactly.
They're like a Dell boy. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind. So he had an office. So it was around the back of Oxford Street, and it was clearly not his office. Like he had a job, and he was doing interviews for his side bitch, you know, project out of his fucking office. So I go in and there's like office people looking at me and they're looking at each other like, it's Peter running his little private business again on office hours, but nobody's saying anything. So I go in and he's like, let's go out for lunch. And obviously because he can't do it on work time, so we go out for this interview and we go out for a cup of coffee and everything like that. And then he says, oh, let's go into Selfridges. So I was like, okay. So he's explaining his whole shtick to me was, you know the London Review of Books?
No, not really.
No,
okay.
Sorry.
Well, it's a very famous, like, you know, literary review. It's called the London Review of Books. Very high-minded, you know, it doesn't just review, like, the new Harry Potter and shit. It's, like, proper fancy books. It's, like, a very prestigious title. But as he pointed out to me, there was no magazine called the London Review. So he was going to pitch a magazine called the London Review, go to all the hotels and places in London, and as he put it, slip 50 quid to the the porter, or what's the guy, the maitre d'? What do they call the guy that's behind the desk that helps you out? At any hotel,
porter.
Fancy hotels, they have, no, the guy, he's like the concierge.
The
right?
concierge. Right.
Concierge. So he was like, oh, you got to do, mate, you slip 50 quid to the concierge and you tell him to put the London Review on the top of the stack of magazines in a lobby and to give them the punters when they come in and stay in the hotel. And bingo, bango, no, there you go, bish, bash, bosh, London Review in their hands, they're looking, reading our reviews. It's a perfect plan. I was like, all right. I was like, are you going to go to every hotel and do this? He goes, oh, if I've got to, mate, I'll do it. I'm a fucking grafter, mate. You know, I'll get the London Review and all these fucking hotels. 50 quid, concierge, bosh, job done. No problem. That's the plan. I was like, so how do you make money? It's like, well, the bars pay us to put adverts and reviews in the magazine. That's how we make the money. We're going to make loads of money, mate. London Review. I was like, are you associated with, like, the London Review of Books? He goes, no. But they didn't copyright the words London Review, so I'm just going to sort of get on the back of that. I was like, oh, I see. So he says, come on, let's go into Selfridges. So you know, we'll just have a look around while we're chatting. So we go into Selfridges on Oxford Street. If you don't know, Selfridges is like a huge department store, very, very glitzy and prestigious department store. And we go in there and we're walking around. And he just does this look over either shoulder like someone that's about to do a drug deal and just grabs a jacket off the rack, puts it on and goes, right, let's go. And we just walk out. And I was like, are you just like nicking that? He was like, oh, yeah, mate, I do it every lunchtime. He goes, there's no guards in the front door. They're mystified. They don't know what's going on. So this is a job interview, potentially to work for this guy, and he's shoplifting during the job interview. I'd never seen anything like it.
Holy shit.
So I was like, right, well, I better go. He's like, all right, I'll see you next week. We'll go out for a drink on Friday. I was like, okay. Because I thought, I've not got a job. What have I got to fucking lose? I'm not a thief. I'm just, you know, talking to one. So we go and meet him in this pub, me and my mate, and we go and meet him. And he's got this older guy who's like his investor, who's like a white boy plus 30 years, you know? So he's like, oh, yeah, mate, London Review. Love it. Think it's a great idea. Peter's an ideas man.
He's wearing a lovely Selfridge's jacket as well.
Yeah. with the tag still on. Peter bought me this in Selfridge's last week. He got this one for me. Lovely, isn't it? Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I saw him pick it out, actually. Yeah, interesting. So, you know, we're drinking, and these guys are, like, slamming the beers down. Like, I can't keep up. My mate is with me. He can't keep up. And we're, like, hammered. It's, like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we're both absolutely battered. And this old guy's just going, slow it down, are you, boys? Like, just sinking a pint, like, no problem. Right, get another one in, Peter. I'll pay, of course. And it was just this weirdest fucking thing. And then I never heard from him again. He's like, make this big deal about it. I assume he got either arrested for shoplifting or he found someone else to write his reviews. But it was just, it was so fucking weird. I've never been on a job interview and had the person doing the interview steal something right in front of me. It was really something.
Fuck me. Some people are so fucking strange.
It was weird. It was really weird.
I used to work at this place where I did like, we did website design. We had like a CMS, like a custom CMS that we'd like build a website on for clients, and then they could, you know, update their web pages by themselves. Like, it was, you know, like this fancy like back end that they could log into and stuff. So like over here, it's like, it's small, right? So you end up selling websites to like all sorts of like weird places. And like, I don't want to go into specifics just in case like anybody knows who this guy is. But anyway, we sold him a website, and he was just the fucking weirdest guy I've ever talked to in my entire life. Like, I actually had to pinch myself. I thought I was dreaming at one point. He was just so bizarre, okay? So we turn up to his office, and in his office, like, everybody that worked in his office looked like they were, like 30 years ago, they were, like, you know, like a centerfold or something.
Right.
But they were like all older women, right? Like sort of like past their glory days or whatever. So that was kind of weird. And he was like really like loose with them, you know, like almost like slapping them in the ass and stuff when he asked them to do stuff and everything. So that was weird, okay? And he's like, just pretty rude, okay? He was like clearly very successful. He had a lot of money and stuff. He was very busy. We get there, and he doesn't, like, meet us at the door or anything. We have to speak to the secretaries and stuff, and we're like, yeah, we got an appointment with this guy. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, we're expecting you. You know, just go in. He's waiting for you, sort of thing. So we're like, oh, okay, cool. And, like, his office is like an old house that's been converted into, like, an office.
Right.
Like an old Victorian house, but it's, like now an office sort of thing. So we go down, like, the passage and go into this room, like, open the door, go into this room. And the guy's sitting there, and he's got, like, this massive, like, mahogany desk, like, really old school, like, fucking huge desk. He's sitting behind it like he's the fucking president or something, right? He's got, like, no, I'm not even kidding. He had, like, fucking 20 monitors, right, with, like, stocks and, like, markets moving and stuff and all this shit. And he's, like, fucking engrossed, right? He is engrossed. And we walk in, and we're like, oh, hi. No answer. And he's, like, just totally engrossed. It was like me and my boss, and we like look at each other, we're like, what the fuck? And he's like, ah, oh, fuck. Like, super loud. We're like, oh, what? And he's like, ah, oh, fuck, I lost another one. Like, just like doing like some stock trading or whatever. He like, turns around. He's like super fucking frustrated. He's like, speak. We're like, what? What? Like, who fucking talks to people like that? So we go into it. And we're like, yeah, you know, like, you know, we got this thing. We got a CMS. We'll get you a website set up and everything. And he's like, I guess he's a bit like your guy, Flax. He's like kind of knows like a thing or two about a thing or two.
But not enough, like, right? He doesn't know enough.
But he's like weary of this, okay? He thinks that we're trying to like fucking screw him over somehow or fleece him of money or whatever. And he's getting like all bogged down in these like really irrelevant details where like he thinks it's too much money for this part of it and stuff like that. And the whole thing was just, I left there and I thought to myself, they should make a movie about this guy because he's perfect. Like, he is just so fucking wacky. Like, that nobody like this exists, like, in the real world.
It's weird,
but
isn't it?
But he does. And he just, you know, lords over these, like, old centerfolds and has fucking 10 screens in his office with his big mahogany desk and speaks to people like they're fucking animals. And oh my God, what the fuck? Like, it was just...
It was weird. It's weird to me that these people have businesses that clearly do make some money from somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. His business was huge.
And you
as
just
well.
Think, like, I wonder if all their customers are also old-fashioned stereotypes. Like, he's like,
Roger, hey, what's going on? It's Frank. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, let me just slap my secretary's ass here. What's that I hear in the background? Were you slapping your secretary's ass as well? I thought so. I thought so. Well played. I understand the business.
Like, they're the only other people that they could do business with. The world's gone crazy. Yeah.
Can't slap a secretary on the ass so nobody smokes cigars. How big is his desk? Doesn't have a desk. Oh, I'm not doing business with Obama. Doesn't have a desk.
It's like, unless you fit their stereotypical criteria, they're not interested.
The liquid lunch thing as well. Like, man, do people fucking still do that? Like, go out at fucking 2 PM and just get completely fucking hammered whilst talking about business?
5 years, yeah. I mean,
oh, for fuck's sake.
Like, so many people do that. Holy shit.
If you go out in London, if you go out at lunchtime, like, this is the, if you don't work or you're not working that day, or if you work, you work from home, or you're not used to going out into London during office hours. I do sometimes. I'll go out, you know, the kids are away, or I'll pop in to see Mrs. F. There's a surprising number of guys in suits at like 3:30 in the afternoon, sat in a pub, just glasses all over the table, just drinking. And I'm just like, are you lads at work right now? Like, you must be. You must be at work, because it's like a Tuesday and you're wearing a suit and you're obviously businessmen, just battered, just absolutely fucking battered. I'm just thinking, what job can they be doing?
You know, like, Lewis, you're going to Japan next week, right?
Oh, yeah.
At lunchtime in Japan, you know what people in business suits do? They go play fucking Street Fighter at an arcade. I'm not even kidding.
Probably.
Like a 12-story arcade, and it's just filled with like old men in business suits playing fucking, you know, Pokemon and Street Fighter and stuff.
Before we move on from that little conversation thread that we were on, did I ever tell you about when we looked around the porn studio in Bristol?
I have not heard this.
I have not heard this. I want to hear this.
So, well, we were looking at like buildings and stuff to move into, and this building came up in sort of the east side of Bristol.
Was the building shaped like a giant phallus?
No, it was kind of like it was kind of in the middle of a residential area. But
was the door like on that Robin Williams movie where he was like the gynecologist, and it was like a set of legs, and the door was like the vagina.
What, like one of those sort of displays
Patch
you see
Adams.
In a museum where you
Apparently,
walk up?
I think he was a fucking gynecologist in Patch Adams.
Yeah, well, what was that? What was that? He had to have been. Why did he have the legs with the vagina door though?
Patch Adams, he was like a kid's doctor. He's not gonna have a vagina door in Patch Adams.
He did. That was in the movie.
No way.
I'm gonna Google it right now. I'll show you a picture. Patch Adams.
Welcome, gynos, at your service. Welcome, gynos, at
vagina
your cervix.
Door.
Like, instead of at your service.
Yeah,
oh
there
my
it is.
God.
I found it.
Okay.
Yeah, look.
Well, you're right. Holy shit.
It's at your cervix. Yeah. It's like a big, like it's a pair of spread legs with a door. Yeah,
anyway.
Patch Adams.
It was nothing like that. It was very seedy and round the corner, around the back and hidden. So it was a big red building, a big sort of big rectangle building. And all the windows were blacked out. It looked like it was an old sewing mill or something where they, you know, so anyway, we went round, me and Terps went round this place, and the guy sort of turns up in a big white Mercedes to turn up, and he's this big guy in a big white suit with a white hat on, and he's like a larger-than-life kind of like porn baron.
A jolly porn baron.
And
I can imagine it. Ha-ha! Like all ho, innuendo. Ho, ho, loads of innuendo.
Ladies.
What a stiff handshake. Ha-ha! Stiff! Why?
Well, we get let in by like this. So I think he rings the doorbell. It's like basically there's girls kind of in yoga pants and sort of like kind of like look like they're between they're living there literally. And so they're kind of walking around in yoga pants and like a crop top. And he sort of slaps one of them on the ass as they go by. And these are like 18 to 25, well, probably not 18, probably like 25 to 30-year-old Eastern European girls, okay? And so the ground floor of this place is all white on the floors, walls, but it's got like a series of, so it's a big open high room with these ancient old cinema cameras in it, right? They look about 25 years old.
Were they like the hand-cranked ones?
They're huge as well, and they're on these big wheels. Yeah, they look like ancient, the things you used to see back in like 70s BBC stuff. And I was like, holy shit, these are like relics from the past, you know. And they're pointing at this sort of series of porn sets, and they're really stereotypical porn sets, right? Like a hospital bed and, you know, like a cafe and like a park bench and stuff. Like really, and a sofa, you know, like a CD. I don't know, they're just... I don't know, stereotypical, like weird old stereotypical 70s shitty porno sets. And there's nice. Like, on the ground floor as well, there's like this...
I don't know if they used sets in the 70s. I think they just like booked out a hotel room and got a guy in there with a camcorder. Well, it wasn't even a camcorder in the...
Maybe.
It was like one of those fucking shoulder-mounted ones.
It's just...
You know, that had the VHS tape in it.
It was so shitty. And then there was a storeroom there, head high full of boxes, all sat on the floor, no shelving, just cardboard boxes. And they had... It was like... I watched an episode of Trailer Park Boys yesterday, and they were going through this storage locker, and they found a storage locker full of... cardboard boxes full of old pornos, right?
Right.
And it reminded me, it was exactly that. It was just boxes to the ceiling of pornos with the names like Top Gunt and stuff, you know, like dumb...
Top Gunt?
Dumb Paris.
Forrest Hump.
Well, that was the one in Trailer Park Boys, but yeah, they were all called stupid...
Shaving Ryan's privates.
Stupid shit like that. Anyway,
Jurassic
so
Pork.
He took us up to, he talked to us about what they were doing. And so he took us up to like the top floor, which was actually so that the roof of it, okay, so you could get onto the roof, and there was this kind of shitty, like dirty sort of stairway where people obviously went up to smoke and stuff on the roof. And it was like he was surveying his kingdom, you know, it was this sort of shitty rooftop sort of square that you could stand in. And he would like sort of look out over Bristol and, you know, like some sort of weird king, and telling us about how he had, you know, 1 terabyte internet and how they streamed to Singapore and stuff. And so we were like, oh, we didn't really know what to expect. And then we went down to like the second floor, so it's a three floor thing, because obviously the roof is doesn't count. But second floor was basically an active porn studio. So they weren't filming pornos, but they were filming those late night girl twiddling the phones things, right? Where it's like, oh, call in. And so...
Oh, like Babe Station.
Yeah.
The whole place was grimy.
I like Babe Station.
People smoking, really quite dirty. The cameras were old. The equipment was old. It looked really run down. And then you'd go round a corner, and all the lights would be on. All the old studio lights would be all on. The big old studio camera pointing at this scene. And it looked... amazing. So these girls who were walking around in dirty crop tops and yoga pants had obviously done their hair, put their makeup on, done it all perfectly, got into all these soft studio lights, sat on this sofa, this big leather sofa, got all the lights on them. And it was like you'd stepped into an alternate reality, Sipsy. You were suddenly detached, because looking at that scene, it looked so pristine and so like an actual palace. Like she was sitting on a sofa in Buckingham Palace, like a super hot girl holding this phone, like twiddling it. But obviously she was, I don't think she said anything. You know, it was just that she was just there. It was just her saying, call in. I don't think she was even saying call in, but, you know, it gesturing. Call in. Yeah. And then it was all being, because this was about 11 o'clock in the morning, and I thought, who fucking watches this? And of course, what it's being is
it's
being
streamed. It's funny, they go to all that Singapore effort. They're like, call in. It's like, we got a caller. Oh, hey, baby, what do you want me to do? Oh, can you burp a bit? Could you fart into the phone, please? Just fart a little bit into the phone, please.
Oh my God.
I saw some porn the other day that was girls farting in each other's faces.
Yeah.
Well,
but it was Brazilian. Like, for some reason, that's big in Brazil.
That's how you get an eye infection, dude.
I know.
I saw this.
That was my first
streamer.
Thought.
A streamer was advertising, like VIP Skype calls, okay? And... She was like five minutes, like one-to-one Skype call or whatever, and I'll burp for free. Like, that's her thing. Like, she burps. I mean, Fuck me, sign me up, I'll do
2 hours later. Yeah,
get on a one-to-one Skype call, fucking burn right in your face. I'll fart too, I don't mind. Jesus, give me money.
I just think, like, of all the things to... I know we've spoken about people fucking pavements and bicycles in the past, but people will sexualize pretty much every single human activity, even farting, which you wouldn't think would be sexy at all. Like, someone just... Oh my God.
One of the weirdest ones is popping spots, isn't it? That gets really sexy.
Oh, that is disgusting. You're kidding me.
That is disgusting.
There's a huge, huge, like, popping thing.
Pimple popping scene.
Yeah. It's absolutely outrageous. It's disgusting.
Did you see that big fucking blackhead she had on her nose?
Oh, my God.
The big string of pus came out. Oh, God, that is disgusting.
No, but what's wrong with people, man?
It's really, really disgusting. But some people absolutely, like, some people are really into, like...
Yeah, and then those same people are probably like, I can't watch pornos from the 80s because the girls' bushes are just too big and gross. And they don't fart enough or burp enough. Ew.
Yeah, holy shit.
No. I'll take a bushy 80s... porn star any day over weird fucking farting and burping and stuff.
Oh, hell
like that.
Yeah.
I don't find that at all sexual or like attractive in the least. Like if I fart, it's different. But like if somebody else farts around me, I'm appalled. Like I think that's
disgusting.
It's
gross.
Shut the fuck up. You are such a fart machine. You're so used to it.
I am, yeah.
You can't be mad at other people farting.
I feel like I'm a busy guy. I'm a dad. I've earned the right to fart freely.
Some people are very self-conscious about farts, and the best way to do it is to just laugh it off. Like every fart should be funny. Okay, that's my motto.
I find now that I'm a bit older, sometimes they're involuntary. Like if I laugh really loud, sometimes I'll accidentally fart now.
Okay,
just drop something. Like drop a glass at the exact moment you fart. All people will remember is you dropped a glass.
Was that a fart? No, I dropped a glass.
Just drop the glass. Oh,
what's
man.
That smell
it
then?
Stinks. Well, I must have been in the glass.
Bad glass.
Well.
Bad glass.
Bad glass.
Yeah. All right, I got another one for you. This is kind of a weird one. I was a lot younger. I would have been about like 19 when this happened. Okay, so me and my mate were on the train back to Bournemouth. We're from London, and we're looking for somewhere to sit down, and we're walking through the train, and who do we see but Jake Shillingford? I'll let that sink in.
We're Googling him. Jake Shilling.
He was the lead singer of a band called My Life Story, which was like a 90s indie band. They never...
Jake Shillingford, not Foot.
F-O-R-D, Jake Shillingford. So
okay,
he was the lead singer of My Life Story, which was... mid-90s, late 90s.
British indie pop group who peaked in the mid to late 1990s when they were regarded as part of the Britpop movement.
Exactly.
Fronted by singer-songwriter Jake Shillingford.
There you go.
The group was formed in London around 1991 and inherited their name from an earlier group in which Shillingford had appeared. A cross between a pop group and a chamber orchestra, the band's sound was heavily oriented towards orchestral instruments.
Okay.
It was a big band, right?
Right.
So they were playing at the Bournemouth International Centre, the BIC, which is like a big sort of leisure / conference centre in the middle of Bournemouth town centre. And they used to have a pool, and they do lots of things there. Like they do like conferences, and they'll do like, you know, tech demos, and there'll be gigs there. They used to do a big New Year's party there and stuff. So this was the freshest ball for Bournemouth University was at the BIC, and My Life Story were the band that were playing. So we're on the train down, and my mate says to me, "That's Jake Shillingford, lead singer of My Life Story." I was like, "Holy shit!" So he says to him, "Are you Jake Shillingford?" And Jake Shillingford went, "You guys recognize me? Like, you know who I am?" And we were like, "Yeah, we really like your song, like 12 Reasons Why. You guys played Plymouth University a few months back. We came to see you." And he was like, "Oh, cool." He goes, "Oh, right. Let's have a chat, lads. Let's have a chat." So we went and found... This is on one of those old slam door trains, right?
Now listen up, boys. I'm setting up a website, right? Where we're gonna be reviewing things. Okay, we're gonna be reviewing music. But First off, boys, you've got to come around with me Selfridges, okay? I need you to do a bit of a distraction job while I maybe just speak with one of the guys, snipping with him for 50, then maybe they'll do London Review. Sorry, no, it's the same guy.
Different guy. Similar thing, but different guy. So, right, are either you lads big on farting? Because I'm branching out. So we go into this sort of one of the little carriages that they used to have. But, you know, they were like the first class carriages with the. But we just went in one. You could smoke in them in those days. So we were in there smoking away and having a chat. And we were talking about the fact he was going to go play at the Bic. And me and my mate, we had no plans. And he said, "Do you guys want to come along? I'll get you into the gig. You could just like hang out backstage and be like my groupies for the night." He was like joking. We're like, "Yeah, sounds good." So we're hanging out with him. And we get to the venue and we get out of the cab and he says to the cab driver, these are two of my groupies. I'm going to fuck them later. And we get out of the cab. And me and my mate look at each other and we're like, this took a dank turn. Like, this was, you know, dank is he serious? Turn. And then he turns around, he like gives us a wink, like, just joking, lads. And we were sort of like, is Jake Shingleford going to fuck us later? Because I want to go home to my mum right now. So we go in. And, you know, there's all the freshers and everything. We're just walking around with Jake Shillingford and we're just having a laugh. And he's a very charismatic guy and everything like that. And we meet all the other band members and they're all completely nonplussed because this is obviously something that he does a lot where he just turns up with someone. And there were the regular groupies who obviously go to all the gigs and knew all the songs. They were very resentful of our presence as the newcomers, right? So they sort of scowled at us a lot.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. So we were sort of just hanging out there, me and my mate saying, this is weird, isn't it? And he was like, yeah. And we were sort of like, should we go? He was like, well, let's just hang out. What else have we got to do? So we wait until the gig was on. And about 10 minutes before they were going to go on, they have a big argument. They're arguing, they're shouting. The drummer's very unhappy about something. And they're all screaming at each other. And Jake Shillingford shouts to the drummer, we can always get a fucking drum machine, you know? And the drummer sort of frowns at him and storms off.
Right.
And they have this big bust up.
Oh, my God. And then he turns to you and he says, can anyone play the drums?
And I say,
you reach into your back pocket and you've got your drumsticks there.
No, in my back pocket is a full drum kit. I just pull it out. And
it's like a full work one. Yeah.
And he's like, if you suck my dick right now.
This story sounds like one of those things. You know, you meet someone, they seem really nice, and then they're like, hey, you want to come to like the gig that I'm doing? And you're like, fuck, this is a dream come true. I can't believe that we're like in the inner circle. We're being invited to this guy's gig and stuff. And everything is like going really smooth. And then you get to the gig and you watch it. And then he comes into the back and he's like, all right, guys, now let's do some crack. And you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I was really expecting that like at any minute.
Take your pants down and drink this.
Yeah, exactly. There's always something fucking sinister afoot in those situations.
Like there was definitely a sinister undertone that we were like, at any minute, this is going to get really dark. And he's going to say something really mean to us. Like, can you lads just fuck off, please?
Yeah.
Stop leeching off my success. Yeah.
Nobody wants to hang out with you two, you fucking
And all the other groupies are going, laughing at us. But no, it didn't happen. In the end, we just watched the gig and then he was like, come on backstage, we'll have a party. And me and my mate were like, let's just go. So we just sort of left.
No, you're too
it was
fucking weird, Jake.
Sorry.
We're going home. Mom, Jake said he was going to fuck me.
It was really
Jake,
weird.
Stop trying to fuck Ted.
It was weird.
Oh my, that is a great fucking story. Holy shit.
Fuck me. That's pretty cool, though.
It was fun. I mean, geez, it was fun. You know, even though he's like Z-less celebrity, we'd been, you know, they've been on telly and stuff.
It's going to come full circle one day, though, Flex. That's going to happen. You're going to be on the train, and two guys from your Twitch chat are going to recognize you, and you're going to be like, fuck, you guys recognize me? And they'll be like, yeah, we've been fans for years, blah, blah, blah. And then you're going to offer them crack and threaten to fuck them as well.
Yeah. And then I'll ask them, can you guys play the drums? Because I got a couple of bongos here right in my pants. Start playing my bongos. Can you play the flute? Because I got a skin flute right in my...
Yeah, fuck, I'm
play
getting excited, actually.
Oh, my gosh.
Could you whistle old Dixie on my skin flute?
Can you guys fart real good loud?
Oh, man.
Could you guys, do you guys want a Coke or something? Just anything to get you burping?
Get burping, get burping. Let's have some beans and some Coke, guys.
Oh, shit.
Oh, fucking hell.
Oh,
fuck.
Man.
I don't know if I've ever met, like, any like, big-time celebrities. Like, you know, like some people are like, I was out to dinner and Tom Cruise was there and I went over and I said hi to Tom Cruise and we talked for a couple of, like, I don't think I've ever met like a big time celebrity just randomly anywhere. But then again, I don't live in the right place, right? Like this always happens to people like in LA.
Yeah, you see a lot of famous people in London. Like, you know, Dolph Lundgren? I stood behind Dolph Lundgren in a cash point queue in Portobello Road. He was just there. He's not as tall as you think. Like in the movie Rocky IV, he looks like he's 6'8", but it's just that Sylvester Stallone is so short, he makes Dolph Lundgren look really tall.
I saw Brian McFadden and Kerry Katona at Disneyland Paris. That's it.
Nice.
They were just with their kids, like, buying stuff.
He is 6.5 feet tall.
Dolph Lundgren.
With Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah. You saw him?
It was 100% him.
Chiseled man, isn't he?
You are like 6 foot, though. So maybe you were expecting to be even bigger than you, but he was actually the same size as you.
But it was him, because people were going, oh, look, it's Dolph Lundgren, and he was going, hello. So it was definitely Dolph Lundgren.
That's cool.
His wife or girlfriend, whoever he was with, she was very, very pretty. He's a very good-looking guy. Like, he's very, you know, very crisp-looking, chiseled. You could see why he's in the movies. Mm. I saw the Queen one time.
Nice.
She was giant, just 7'8", massive.
Maybe it was Dolph Lundgren.
I don't know.
Maybe it was. Maybe he's doing... It was a new role where he plays the Queen.
I seen a bunch of random people. I saw Gabe and Steven Spielberg.
I met Gabe. That's true. I met him at Valve headquarters.
What was meeting Gabe like?
It was weird because he had obviously been asked to do this. And this was at TI4, I think it was. So it was like, at that point, you could buy a VIP ticket. So if you were like a fan or if you were working there, you had to go to the VIP meet and greet. So it was at the Valve headquarters. They had one of the office floors was like dedicated for the VIPs. So you had all these regular punters that had paid for the VIP ticket and all the talent that was working there and the developers and stuff. We were all just hanging out and it was really fucking awkward. There was Gabe and you could queue up. So I queued up to meet Gabe. It was like, you know, like meeting Santa, honestly. And you're literally like a bunch of kids all form in line. You go in and you meet Gabe, you sit on his knee. He asks you what you want for Christmas and you tell him. And I said to him, I just wanted to say, you know, thanks for giving me a job and everything. Because if it wasn't for Dirt or I wouldn't have a job. And he was like, no problem. And that was the end of the conversation. And I wanted to say to him, could you give me like $10 million? Because you won't even notice if it happened. But it just never came up.
I think if you want to get the best from like a celebrity, though, you have to ask them about something they're really interested in.
Yeah.
And then they'll talk to you for a long time. But then you risk them shattering the illusion of them being cool by them, you know, just absolutely fucking ripping on one about something stupid that they really like.
It's true.
If you met Gabe and you're like, oh, hey, Gabe, you know, nice to meet you. Fuck, I got this new hunting knife the other day and it's not like as ribbed as I'd like it to be or something. And then he just like went off on one and started telling you about his whole knife collection and stuff. You might think differently of him after that, right?
Mm.
You think he's a nerd.
You might not like hold him in such a high esteem anymore because he's just like waffling on about something you don't care about. But you wanted to like get into his good books by, you know, talking about something that he was interested in or whatever.
Yeah. I wonder if that happens where people have gone and researched what those people are into. And they're like, I understand you're interested in remote controlled aeroplane flying. I am too, you know. And it's like in an attempt to start a sort of conversation beyond, I liked your last movie. Thanks. You know, which is like most of the conversations would probably be like. So...
But then after you've like talked to him and you said, oh, you know, thanks for creating a game that gave me a job or whatever. And then like the conversation just ends after he's like, oh, yeah, no problem. And then he just like walks off.
Yeah, but I didn't want to bore him.
See him talking to like the super fan about the knives and they're having like, they seem to be having like an awesome conversation. You're like,
he's like pulling knives out from the pockets.
Fuck. He's been talking to Gabe about that stuff.
Writing him a check. Like,
like you're my son now.
So there's
have
a lot
cup of
different...
beans, why don't you? And come back to my place. These are my trademark invention. I spent my fortune on fizzy beans. They make you both fart and burp. Oh, it's such a joy.
He's like the Willy Wonka of beans. So the lesson here is, never meet a celebrity who never meet your idols because you'll always be a little bit disappointed because either they're going to waffle on about something that you don't give a shit about and you're going to hate them after, or they're going to be really short with you and stand behind a rope and you just have to hold a dictaphone like in their face and while other people ask them questions, and that's going to be disappointing as well.
So but do you know what? I asked Paul Giamatti, because at the time he was linked with doing a biopic about Philip K. Dick, who's one of my favorite authors, and I said to him, is it true that you're doing a bio of Philip K. Dick? And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And he was like, I'm a big fan. He said, I love Dick. And I was like, okay, thanks. And then we were talking about like Philip K. Dick for about 5 minutes. And then he said, oh, I got to go, and ran in. So I actually had that moment with Paul Giamatti. But the project never came to anything. Never came to anything. Like, they just fucking got canned. He was obviously super excited to do it. And I was excited.
His love for Dick, yeah.
I love Dick, he said. Like, that was obviously his little joke about Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Philip K. Dick's last name is Dick, you see.
Yeah, I get it, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of sounds like Dick.
There is, like, a show, I think, making loads
of
Philip K.
Dick. It's called Electric Dreams. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean,
a
lot of the sort of Philip K. Dick ideas are a bit weird.
They are. No, they're bonkers. They've obviously had to take it as a core idea. And because he was doing a lot of amphetamines when he wrote most of his short stories. Like, he was a very crazy guy. Brilliant writer. Like, I love his stuff. But if you read his short stories, a lot of them are just nuts. And a lot of them are very repetitive. Like, the number of times that there is a war that has blasted a planet until there's naught left but molten slag and just blasted heat, and there's no growth, and there's just people in bunkers. And that's pretty much the setup for like half of Philip K. Dick's stories. It's like a war has gone horribly wrong, and now it's like, you know, how do they trick each other with all their clever technology? And so it's like they're sending robots into each other.
Yeah, but if you're writing all these things during the fucking Cold War, which he was, you know, absolutely, it's going to be a very formative way. You know, it's going to be very anti-apocalypse kind of thing.
Oh, it is. But, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, I guess this is in response to Black Mirror doing so well, you know, that they think, okay, let's do a show similar to that. But yeah, a couple of them are out, I think. I haven't seen any yet.
I saw the first one. It's called The Hoodmaker.
Yeah.
It's okay. It wasn't bad. Like all Philip K. Dick stories, it has no resolution. Right? Most of them just end.
I know. Yeah.
There's one where a guy discovers that he's either a robot or he's experiencing some kind of strange altered reality, and he finds out that in the middle of his body there's like a ticker tape machine, and there's a thin spool of tape running through this machine at all times, and it's got holes punched through it, and he finds that if he punches a hole in a piece of a tape before it goes through this sort of reader, that he experiences something. So he punches a hole in, and suddenly there's like an elephant in his room. And then as that hole goes through the reader, the elephant disappears. So he realizes his entire life is being played out on this spool. And at one point, what he does is, I think the end of the story is, he cuts the spool and it runs through, and he just experiences everything there is at once. And that's like the end of the story. And it's like,
wow.
it's an incredible idea. And obviously, I loved it, but there's no resolution there. Like, it's just the story ends, a puff of smoke comes out of his mouth, and that's it. So it's just these
like
ideas
that
you explore mentally, but you don't, it doesn't, as a narrative for a TV show, it's fucking crackers.
I think sometimes those short stories can kind of, I don't know, like, sometimes people write an entire book or do an entire series around what basically should be a short story. Like
right.
Stephen King's The Mist or whatever, you know, has been made into a TV show lately on Netflix, and I started trying to watch it because I didn't like the film. I thought the film was okay.
And
some films you feel like they would have been better as TV series, because some films feel rushed, right?
It's a little bit like
2 hours
isn't
enough to tell the whole story.
The latest,
and you want to immerse yourself a bit more and stuff.
Yeah, the latest Rick and Morty episode was a clip
haven't
show,
seen
basically.
It yet. Haven't seen
yeah,
it.
So it's basically like all of the ideas they had that didn't make it into full episodes, squashed into one.
Nice.
And yeah, I thought it was good. It was kind of they did it instead of their intergalactic. Add whatever that nonsense.
The TV,
intergalactic nonsense TV, which is that weird Justin Roiland garbage that he sometimes spurts out every, you know, it's great. It's good. I mean, Rick and Morty is great.
I got a lot of time for shorts. Like, I was talking to Flax the other day because he was going to watch the new Star Trek on Netflix. I haven't seen it. I don't even know if I'm going to watch it. Like, the last time I watched Star Trek avidly was The Next Generation,
yeah,
which I liked because I like the format of the show, in that It was just every episode was self-contained. It was like a short story each episode, right? There was something would happen, and then there was recurring characters, and some stories were a bit bigger, and they spanned over a couple episodes or whatever, or a situation spanned a couple episodes.
And it was a very hit and miss. But when you have 22 episodes per series and you're doing a series a year, but a good proportion of those are going to be crap. But some episodes were fantastic.
You know, they just had a nice little story that just like resolved itself in the end, sort of thing.
There's going to be some gems in there, and I went back and watched it all recently. I've talked about this before, but yeah, I recommend just doing like a watch it, skip it. Some guy on Reddit has watched all of Star Trek and really just says, you know, okay, watch these episodes only, and
don't watch the ones where Picard like gets a pony in the holodeck. Watch this one.
Avoid all holodeck episodes, all episodes with Alexander.
Some of them are pretty good.
Avoid all episodes with Alexander, Worf's son.
The ones where they go back to
avoid all episodes with Deanna's mother. Anything where they're in, anything involving costumes, period costume, avoid. Avoid especially the worst episode I've ever seen, where Beverly Crusher goes home and there's a Scottish ghost that greets her. Avoid.
That is one of the worst episodes of all time.
I'm going to watch that one now. It sounds
watch
hilarious.
The episode where Beverly and Deanna have yoga. Do yoga.
Yeah.
In the yoga.
Oh my God. I'll definitely watch that one.
Are they farting and burping and shitting on each other?
Have you seen the new Star Trek, Lewis? Have you started watching it?
Fart on my face.
I've watched it. I've watched the two episodes of the new series, yeah.
Right, okay. And?
It's
okay.
It's okay.
Honestly, if P-Flex says it's okay, then that means it's probably good.
I didn't get much out of it. It's obviously it's new era Trek, so the Klingons are.
But if it's okay, that means you enjoyed it. So that
you can watch it. You can watch it with Klingon subtitles. Apparently,
yes, you can. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that I remember my friend getting a Klingon dictionary for like his birthday one year. At the time, we were like 10, so that was pretty cool. Like looking back now, that's pretty fucking nerdy, I guess. But I think it's cool that like they've actually got a language that they can subtitle their show with. Like, that's pretty hilarious, actually. Do people speak Klingon to each other at like
conventions? You know they do.
Conventions and stuff.
Yeah, you could take a degree in Klingon. Like that was a degree offered, I think, at probably one university, probably very briefly. But you could take Klingon as a degree.
Fuck me.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Hugh Hefner's dead as well. He died yesterday. Are we allowed to say dates, Lewis? You seem to always be really touchy about this.
Well, people know that we record this a week before it goes out, don't they? Right. So
2017 has claimed another great.
Yep. Hugh Hefner.
He died.
How did he die?
He was 91 and he died in the Playboy Mansion surrounded by naked women.
Is that what
probably
it says?
The best way to go. Yeah, some of them were farting as well.
Right.
Martha, the last thing I want...
I want to smell your sweet rosé fart. It's for you to
burp in my face as I die.
I want you to puffle like only a lady can.
I want my last breath to be filled with your anal stench. Quickly.
Conjunctivitis doesn't matter now, Martha.
I'm slipping. Does anybody have any crack? Pull my pants down.
Oh, man.
Oh, poor Hugh, man. He lived a life, though, right? Like,
I mean, you know he was a creepy motherfucker, right? I mean,
right. You'd have to be, but still.
I heard the Playboy Mansion was really filthy and dirty and sleazy, like the porn place I went around.
Probably,
I heard it was just
think about it. He's
really
like
shit.
He's an old man, right? Old people, they tend not to be able to take care of their
house. Wasn't it up for sale? Wasn't the Playboy Mansion up for sale?
Like, I don't think so. No, I think it's always been very, very successful.
Wasn't it sold for like £100 million, and then didn't it fall through? I think it definitely sold because it was. I remember it. People looking around. Yeah, Playboy Mansion goes back on market after sale falls through.
Oh right.
Yeah, this is the case. It's because you can look up the Playboy Mansion, and I think it was just disgusting. And it was really horrible in there.
God.
And I think they tried to sell it for $100 million, and then it fell through. So maybe he never ended up selling it. It's been a creative center for Hef for the past 40 years as his residence and workplace, and will continue to be. I think the idea was that they were going to sell it, but he was going to get to live there till he died, you see.
I always imagine that the Playboy Mansion is one of those places where, like, when it was like, you know, first like when they first moved into it or they built it or whatever, it was probably fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, just like absolutely pristine and everything. But like if that happened, say like in the 60s, like now it's probably crummy as shit. Like all the wood is like fucking sticky and like,
yeah,
you know, there's dust
like,
everywhere.
All the stuff, like they would have had one of those rotating fireplaces with a TV on one side. It doesn't really work.
It just looks so fucking jivey.
Oh yeah, you
gotta
lean on it. Lean on one side. Jiggle it. Yeah, no, don't sit on that sofa. That's the broken sofa. Don't sit on that one. Well, the hot tubs don't work. They're all full of leaves and beetles and things. And, don't open that door. Just don't open it.
It stinks in there.
It stinks.
I don't know what the stink is, but
that's the fart
it fucking
chamber.
Stinks.
Yeah, something died in there. One of the bunnies crawled in and died. I don't know which one. One of the old ones. Yeah, we got a bunch of new bunnies coming in today. There we go. Bus pulls up and a bunch of convicts get off. They're just there on day release.
Yeah, fucking.
My bunnies are here. Hey.
Covered in fucking snake tats.
Oh my god.
Jeez.
So no, I mean, like, I think his place will be a little bit like that place with all those old centerfolds, like you spoke about earlier, you know, with that fucking guy.
Yeah, they are the fucking dentures and fucking Zimmer frames and stuff. They're all like just puttering around.
See, now there's There's an old person that had a shitload of sex, I bet. He was still sexing it up.
Yeah.
At 91, though.
Dude, Viagra, penis pump, pneumatic implants.
Do you reckon he was just like fucking banging away till 91 years old?
Ask yourself this. It's Hugh Hefner. If anyone's going to be having sex at 91, can you think of someone else?
I think if you are Hugh Hefner, you can just get away with asking anyone, can't you? Like, hey, do you want to have a trouble, baby? Just like anyone as a
that's
joke.
That's the least sexy way. Do you want to have a tumble, baby? Have a tumble, baby?
I don't know how he would
Hefner
do it.
Doesn't even need to use words to ask, though. That's the thing.
Yeah,
he probably
just
has
points.
Like a system where he snaps his finger a certain way and then everybody just undresses and fuck him. Like, you know, he's
what's
probably
the
got a
line
system.
That I heard him? He used. I think he used the line like, do you know
Taj
how to?
Mahal,
do you know how? Like, if he was
balls.
Like talking to a girl who had spots, he was like, "Do you know what the cure for spots is? Sex." It's like what?
What?
Like there was like some creepy lines that he had.
That would probably work for him. Like if any of us went up to a girl and said that, we would probably get maced, but you know, Hefner probably just got a lot of pussy that way.
Oh
and
my
fair
god.
Fair play to him.
Wouldn't it be amazing if it turned out that he was the opposite, that he was like just like a celibate man? He was like just a really honorable businessman. He never had sex in his whole life.
What if Hugh Hefner was celibate?
Yeah.
Sex?
Yeah.
No, I sell it. Don't have it. Just sell it. I'm not interested in it. Farting and burping.
I don't have a dick. It's just a smooth mound down there. Yeah. I don't have anything.
It's just a little nubbin.
They cut it off in Nam.
Yeah,
I haven't told anyone.
Some VC came out of the bushes. Charlie got the drop on me. Boom. No more pee-pee.
I got my pee-pee and my balls right off. I don't got shit down there. Oh, fuck. Anyway. Well, that's probably enough Triforce for one day.
Yeah.
It was a nice podcast, guys. Good job.
That was a great
podcast.
Give yourself
a round of applause. It's nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, are you doing your loud clap again that everyone hates? Oh, my God.
Yeah, Lewis actually got mad at me last time I was in Bristol.
He was clapping right next
to
my ear.
And I was doing
and it was
really loud
so
clapping.
Fucking loud. It was making my ear ring. Like
thunderous.
That
also sounds like someone having really vigorous sex with a large bottomed woman.
Yeah. It's like a really loose ball bag.
Let's hear it again. Hear it again. Yeah. It does.
Really does.
Really slamming away. Yeah!
Fart a little!
Woo!
Fart! Boop on me! No.
Stop it, Hugh! Your balls, your 91-year-old balls are so saggy! They're slapping everywhere! You'll die, Hugh! I don't care!
Oh, fuck me. Right. Well, thanks
maybe
for
that's the secret.
Everybody.
Maybe that is the secret to living to 91. Just fucking sex.
Tons of
all
sex,
the time.
Yeah. Keeps your ticker in check. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. So, there you go. Thanks, everyone.
Have a great time in Japan. We didn't discuss it at all.
Enjoy Japan, Lewis. We'll see you when you get back.
Yeah, it'll be great.
You'll have a fantastic time.
There won't be any Triforce for like 2 weeks after this one, everybody.
See you in 3 weeks, everyone.
Goodbye. Right.
Bye.